Well, good morning, and welcome to our weekly press conference. I'm especially pleased to welcome Mid-America Energy CEO Bill Fehrman and Siemens Wind Power America's CEO Mark Albans, who are joining us for a special announcement today, and they will be available to answer questions after the Lieutenant Governor and I make a presentation. This morning, Iowa will be taking another big leap towards our clean energy future. I will be joining Siemens and Mid-America Energy at Siemens Fort Madison Manufacturing Facility for a big announcement today. Folks from across the state are joining the Lieutenant Governor and I, and I'm really excited to be going to Lee County, where Siemens is making the announcement that Mid-America Energy has selected Siemens as the turbine supplier for the 1,050 megawatt wind development project, which we announced at a press conference here earlier this year. Siemens confirms that Mid-America Energy's recent order is the world's largest onshore wind project consisting of 448 turbines. All of the blades for the wind turbines will be manufactured at the Siemens facility in Fort Madison, Iowa. Lieutenant Governor and I visited that facility earlier this year, and I know that they have continued to perfect the blades and making longer blades and more efficient blades, and it's a pretty exciting facility. Wind is more than just an important resource for renewable energy in the state of Iowa. It also provides tremendous economic benefits to our state, be it the people working at the Siemens factory or the farmers that are going to be getting the benefit of leasing property, or the homeowners that are going to be able to have this renewable energy source, or companies like Facebook and others that will be utilizing it. I now like to turn it over to Lieutenant Governor Reynolds to share more details about this historic economic development project.
Good morning, and thank you, Governor Branstad. And Bill and Mark, thank you also for joining us this morning. It's a privilege to have you here. When complete, Mid-America's 448 wind turbine will generate enough electricity to power the equivalent of approximately 317,000 average Iowa households. Projects like Mid-America Energy's 1,050 megawatt wind expansion continue to make Iowa a recognized leader in renewable energy. According to the American Wind Energy Association, Iowa ranks among the top three states when it comes to the construction of wind power generation. Approximately 25% of the state's energy portfolio comes from wind alone. About 1,000 construction jobs will be added to Iowa's economy during the two-year construction period for the 448 new wind turbines, and approximately 40 new permanent jobs will be added when the expansion is complete. In addition to those Mid-America's energy wind expansion, will support approximately 500 Siemens employees at the facility in Lee County. And it's hard to believe that Fort Madison Siemens factory produced the first blade in 2007, and since then, more than 9,000 blades have been manufactured and shipped since the plant began its operations. This is a tremendous accomplishment and really something that Siemens and Iowans can be really proud of. Mid-America Energy's most recent $1.9 billion wind expansion is putting Iowans to work. Wind projects not only foster economic development while demonstrating, it also demonstrates the state's commitment to renewable energy and environmental respect.
Thank you, Lieutenant Governor Reynolds. As a leader in wind generation, we welcome the opportunity to expand renewable energy in the great state of Iowa. Mid-America Energy's expansion will be the largest economic development project in the history of our state, bringing needed jobs to Iowa as well as significant economic benefits. A live stream of the announcement at 1 p.m. can be found on American Wind Energy Association's website, or AWEA.org. With that, we'd be glad to respond to questions, and as well our friends from Mid-America Energy and Siemens would also be willing to respond to questions you might have.
Mr. Fehrman, is this sort of Well, certainly the production tax credit is fundamental to these types of projects, and we're continuing to work with our congressional delegations and others to try and continue that credit going forward. It's not clear exactly where that may stand, but clearly with regards to these projects, the benefit of the tax credit was very crucial to our decision to move forward with this project.
Other questions?
It is required. The production tax credit, for us to continue to do projects going forward, the production tax credit would have to be in place.
Just to give you a little history on this, this wind energy tax credit, which Senator Grassley, I think, was the author of originally, has expired a number of times over the years. You may recall that last year I worked in a bipartisan basis with a number of governors and with Senator Grassley and others to get this extended. It was extended through the end of 2013 for projects that are begun before its expiration, which is different than the previous expiration, which said it had to be completed before that date. So this was an improvement. Now, we would like to see it extended further, but as I also pointed out, wind energy has become more and more efficient, and the cost of generating through wind continues to go down. The cost of generating by coal has become very expensive and more difficult. So we continue to see an opportunity in the future for wind energy. The tax credit has certainly been an important benefit that we think should be continued at least for some time. But I don't think you're going to see a total curtailment of wind energy projects. Project of this magnitude, as Bill mentioned, probably would not have occurred without the tax credit, and we're very appreciative to Senator Grassley, Senator Harkin, and our entire congressional delegation to help get that accomplished.
Mr. Albans, can you speak to how the uncertainty about the tax credit is affecting
this? Well, as Bill pointed out and the governor pointed out, this is a little bit different than it was in the previous, as we have about some time to extend. If as long as the projects are started before the end of this year, those projects are eligible for the PTC. So an order at the magnitude of this gives us a stable base for the next couple of years. But one of the exciting things that Fort Madison, and I'm not sure you're aware of, Governor, is that we're exporting now to countries like Brazil, Chile, Peru, South Africa. So that plant not only supports the United States, but also is a key exporter. So that's been, as we had to slow down this last year, that's been a key exporter for us, and we're very proud of our employees at Fort Madison and their ability to provide cost-effective blades that can be exported outside of the state of Iowa.
Thank you very much. Other questions?
On the Iowa Health and Wellness Plan waiver.
Yep.
Lawmakers in Nebraska have talked about modeling after the Iowa Health and Wellness
Plan. Well, obviously, we fought long and hard to get our waiver, and we think the difference between what our Iowa Health and Wellness Plan and Medicaid expansion is, we've seen Medicaid expansion over the last 30 years, and it's not resulted in improving health for the American citizens. Our plan is focused on and designed to be consistent with our goal of being the healthiest state for people to take ownership of their own health, and the focus on people doing health risk assessments, annual physicals, and then also with this accountable care organizations, having health care providers available throughout the state to help deliver and help people indeed improve their health. So we think this is a different plan. Other states like Tennessee and Pennsylvania and many others are looking at our plan, and obviously each state has to make the decision they think makes the most sense for them, but it was not easy, and we're very pleased. I want to give Michael Bougelot credit, along with our people from Department of Human Services here in Iowa, we insisted that the waiver had to be consistent with Iowa law, and we got that done. And that was important because we wanted to work in good faith with the bipartisan legislation that was approved by the Iowa General Assembly. And we're going to continue to work to make sure that our plan, which is very similar to what we did when we did welfare reform, is a unique plan that focuses on improving people's health. Yeah, it is misrepresentation, and that's too bad, but that doesn't bother me. That happens in the national media all the time. We have to deal with those situations. Iowans, I think, understand what we're doing, and I think Michael and Nick Gerhardt, our insurance commissioner, and the people in Iowa have done a great job of educating people as to the uniqueness of our plan and why we think it makes sense for Iowa to become the healthiest state. We're not just one of those states that just said, oh yeah, we'll take the federal money. No, we said no. Instead, we said we have a healthy Iowa plan, but we also worked in good faith with the legislature on a compromise that ended up the Iowa Health and Wellness Plan, which is very similar to our Healthy Iowa Plan, but it does also include being able to receive the federal dollars, and it was not an easy process to get HHS to agree to the waiver that we had to get. Now, we thought we should have had that before October 1. We finally got it now. And again, we're still going to be examining the details. We have an agreement, and I think we've seen some language, and it's presently being reviewed to work out all the details. But, you know, with the federal government, it's not just trust. It's trust but verify. Obviously, they have not always fulfilled their promises, and they've sometimes put out information that wasn't accurate. We're going to do our level best to educate people, make people know what is expected and what their responsibilities are. And the key to this being successful is for people to take ownership of their own health and do the right things, not use tobacco products, do health risk assessments, identify their risk factors, and then work to reduce those.
So what happens to the premium if somebody doesn't, I mean, what happens to a person who's enrolled in this plan and they don't pay the premium? What happens to them?
That was one of the issues that we worked on for a long time, and eventually, if they don't pay the, first of all, if they do the health risk assessment,
right.
The whole focus is on being healthy. So if they do the health risk assessment, the state picks up the premium. If they don't do the health risk assessment, there is a hardship waiver. If they don't get the hardship waiver and they don't do the assessment and they still don't pay the premium, our position was, just like anybody else has insurance that doesn't pay the premium, would be canceled. Instead, the federal government says, no, you're going to have to collect that. But there's very various mechanisms for the state to collect when somebody owes something to the state.
And that doesn't even take effect until 2015.
Right. It doesn't
so
take
it's a whole
so the
year
big focus here
really
is get health risk assessments and become healthier.
Right.
And that's the whole goal here is to drive people to make good, healthy decisions. I saw this work at Des Moines University. We started this for all faculty, staff, and students. And, you know, we were a recipient of the Wellness Council of America's Platinum Level Recognition, the first college or university in the whole United States to get that when I was the president of Des Moines University for what we did for wellness. So I believe in wellness, and I believe that we've demonstrated it can work, and we want to do it for our whole population.
And you think that'll translate well to the very poor
population? Absolutely. I think it translates to everybody. I think everybody wants to be healthier, and in this a situation where if you do the health risk assessment, it isn't going to cost you anything. So there's a real incentive to do the right thing here. Well, I want to commend the FBI and the people that were able to detect this espionage going on and arresting the people that are responsible for it. I think it's critically important that everybody understand that our laws need to be, intellectual property needs to be protected, and it will be in this country. I believe that it may present some additional challenges in terms of our relationship between the two countries, but this is a particular incident, and we've been working for 30 years to build friendship, trust, and relationships between our two countries, and I don't think this should prevent us from continuing to work together to improve opportunities for both the United States and China.
Will there be changes in security or scrutiny on future visits from the Chinese?
Well, let me just say, there's always going to be security and scrutiny, and I can tell you, when then Vice President Xi came here, there was tremendous amount of security and scrutiny that went on at that time, and anytime we have people come here, we want to do that, whether they're, presidential candidates from our country or whether they're foreign visitors. We want to make sure that they're treated fairly and that we have a safe and secure situation, and we also want to protect the rights of Iowans and Iowa companies. Well, there were 1,600 people at that state dinner. I'm sure there are probably other people that maybe have some things that are questionable in their background, too. But, we can't there's no way that we're going to be able to detect everybody that comes to any event or any dinner. But I do think that you need to know that the FBI and the federal agencies and our state Department of Public Safety work closely together. I received a call from Larry Noble in advance telling me that this was going to happen. So we had good communication, and the Lieutenant Governor and I are briefed on a monthly basis on these kinds of issues. And there are many of these issues. You maybe also saw that we had a situation in Wichita, Kansas, with an American citizen who was involved in activities and plans to blow up the airport. So we live in a dangerous time, and we need to be very careful to protect the safety and security of our citizens and also the intellectual property of our businesses. Well, I'm telling you, we already have stepped up security, and it is very significant, and it's going to continue to be, and I think the fact that you had this situation is going to just heighten that. But I guess I want to assure you that the security is very strong and very tight, and the communications between the state and federal level are good. And the fact that the individual was caught and will be prosecuted is an indication that this is taken seriously, and we do have effective means of preventing it, just as the situation in Wichita and many dozens of others that have occurred in this country.
What are your plans for the city of Toledo regarding the job losses that they will occur because of the closure?
Well, first of all, as Jerry Foxhoven, I think, so eloquently stated, when I appointed the task force, our focus was on what's in the best interest of the kids that are being treated there, and the concerns that we had about some of the mistreatment, children being locked in solitary confinement, having some cases of abuse, and being denied education rights. We felt those issues need to be addressed, and they need to be addressed in a very open manner, and I think that the task force did its work and did a good job. They made their recommendations. We carefully analyzed their recommendations and agree. And in fact, and I met with people from the community and asked if there were any disagreement with those recommendations, and I heard none. I believe that we are doing the right thing to protect the interests of these children. There should not be the statement that this is a placement of last resort. That is in no case. It always ought to be, this is a placement designed to help you to be able to address the problems that you have or the issues, and to improve your mental health and your opportunities, and also to be able to further your education. And that's what we're doing. No, it's that's the reason why we should never say that. We should always look at what is the best and most effective way to deal with it. That is the mindset we need to change. And I hear that from legislators, and I hear that from too many people. We need to look at this from the perspective of what's in the best interest of these kids. And I've met with Disability Iowa, and I've talked to Jerry Foxholm and people that are knowledgeable on this, and they said, We've got an outmoded, I guess you might say, penal approach towards dealing with these kids. And we need to have a more enlightened approach towards treatment and helping them to be successful. And we do have facilities around the state of Iowa that are dealing with kids, children in need of assistance, and with delinquents, and have been effective in doing so. Four Oaks and many other facilities around the state have done this. Well, first of all, instead of trying to cast the blame, I want to address the problem and fix it in a way that meets the needs of the kids. There's too much people want to play politics and cast blame, and instead what we need to do, and that's what I instructed the task force to do, come up with a plan that's focused on meeting the needs of these kids, not on fixing the blame, not on protecting the status quo, but something that's going to really work and benefit these kids who have been unfairly treated, have been held in solitary confinement, that have been abused. This is not acceptable, and we don't want to see this happen in the future.
All right. Thank you, Governor.
Thank you.